you know, they often give you a sample of the panhandles, right? And you go on a big tour, and this is world renowned. You know, I just got back from a tour of the Guinness Stout plant, where they make stout. And in keeping with the tradition, they gave us a few samples. Some guys are still there on the tour. They never left. They won't go now. They're just sitting down there drinking it up. But nevertheless, when I was a kid, we used to live in northern Indiana. Remember, northern Indiana, I'm going to explain something to you here that you may perhaps don't know. It may surprise you to know that there is a rich and varied life that goes on in other parts of the country. Now, that is somewhat of a cultural surprise to people who have lived their entire life in the East and have read only the New York Post, Pete Hamill, and an occasional novel by Norman Mailer or Philip Roth. There is a rich and varied life that goes on in other parts of the country. They never heard of the rich and varied life that goes on Lexington Avenue. Miles in Indiana and see nothing but Sears Roebuck signs. Places saying International Harvester Dealer straight ahead. Once in a while you'll pass a sign that says Welcome Rotary Club, meets every Wednesday. And you're in a town, but you can't see the town. You know, you just go right through, there's nothing there. And corn. You know, the corn sometimes, you can be in a field of corn driving along a road in Indiana, and the corn is so high that it blocks out literally part of the sky. It just zaps like you're going through a canyon. And it's heated, you see, because the corn radiates moisture. And boy, you're driving like 500 degrees when you're whipping through a cornfield like that. And you can hear, if you ever stop your car, you turn your key off, and you hear just the sound of millions of humming insects when you're down in the middle of the cornfield. And you can smell the corn. Really a distinctive, rich smell. Well, so what do you do when you live in a place like Indiana and you want to go on vacation? Where do you go? Well, here, of course, everybody goes to Chadwick Beach, New Jersey. Down there, you know, the land of the really creative telephone poles. You know how the itch hits in this area. When the itch to get out hits in this area, the Long Island Expressway is one solid sea of iron, bumper to bumper, stretching to the horizon. Where are they going? Well, no place in particular. They're out for what is known euphemistically as a ride. Out for a ride. Well, where do you go? You just go out. Most places, you know, people have a certain place they go, and then they turn around and come back. And join the river that's flowing back to the sea. You see, one river flows away from the sea, one flows back. Well, the old man to get the itch, usually roughly about the beginning of summer. Because in the beginning of summer, one is constantly burdened with a false sense of optimism. That's what spring does to you. You figure this is going to be the summer, it's going to go all the way. It's going to be fantastic this summer. More than that, you know, the car's not going to be any problems this year because I got the valves ground. Everything is looks good, see. So the old man gets the itch, usually about Friday afternoon. And Saturday morning, he's out messing around with the car, and he comes in, he says, look, he says, let's put a lunch together, right? Get a lunch together, and we're going to go out. Let's take a trip to Michigan. Well, now, Michigan, from where we lived, which was in northern Indiana, was and is. Michigan has not moved since I was a kid. It's still there. So is Indiana. Michigan was and is the part we went to, roughly about 120 miles. Good trip. Nice round trip. So. Nice overnight trip. You drive there and you stay in a motel and the next day you come back, right? Well, we get out of the car, get all packed in, get a lunch and the whole business, and we start driving towards Michigan. Now, Michigan was slightly to the east of us and to the north. And you'd skirt the lake. You'll see it on the map. Well, that's sandy country, dunes, as you leave that northern Indiana part. You go, it's dunes all the way on up the lake, curves up through places called Michigan City, Indiana, which is right on the Michigan border, Mishawaka. And then suddenly you're in Michigan. The minute you were in Michigan, you knew you were in Michigan because the roads were different. Instantly. Just like the roads are different in Jersey than the ones in New York. They're very different. And as soon as we crossed into the Michigan border, over the Michigan border, we're in this town called Niles. Niles, Michigan. You ever heard of it? Well, Niles, Michigan is famous for one thing. You know how towns get famous for things? Niles, Michigan was famous for and still remains famous. That's why I'm reading this. This piece fascinates me. It was famous for the greatest ice cream in the entire Midwest. I don't know why, but Niles, Michigan had the reputation of great ice cream. So it was like automatically a part of a ritual. We would stop at this place where they had ice cream, and there'd be a lot of other cars, and there's a drive-in. We'd go in and get the ice cream. We'd sit in the car, eat ice cream, sipping on our poultry and stuff. And then finally we would proceed north towards the goal that we had set. We hoped to make it by 4 o'clock, because that was the big moment. We were traveling north. We went through the town of Kalamazoo, which was a river, by the way. It's right on Lake Michigan. And then there were towns, three town names at the Kalamazoo. How about this town, Water Valete? It's a great name, Water Valete, Michigan. Paw Paw, Michigan, that's the name of the town. And a lot of Indian names of town. Mishawaka is an Indian name, by the way. And so we're moving north, and finally we come to Battle Creek. Now, do any of you know why Battle Creek is named Battle Creek? Or do you just accept that as a name, Battle Creek? The word battle has meaning. Well, there was a great battle that was fought on that creek during the Indian Wars. It became known as Battle Creek. In fact, several battles were fought there. And it became known as the Battle Creek. That's where they had battles. And there are still some Indians around there. But Battle Creek, Michigan, is a nice southern Michigan town sitting right there near the shores of Lake Michigan. Warm all the time. Now, what is Battle Creek known for? That's right. Where were we going? This was the whole point of the weekend trip. Well, this is the whole point of it. We would park the car, we'd go charging out, and the whole point of the trip was right at that moment. The excitement is rising high, and we would go to the gates of the plant of the Post Cereal Company, where they made Post Toasties. And you know, various other. What else were their famous things? Well, I will tell you. We stood in front of the gate, and it said visitors. And they gave you buttons, and the guard would come out, and he had Rice Krispie covered uniforms and stuff. They'd come out and give you buttons and stuff. And then they would get enough people together for a tour, like say 10 or 12 or 15 families would be gathered, all standing there waiting, and the tour guide would come out, an official guide of the Post Cereal plant, and it was a girl, it was always a girl, would come out, and she would say, "And now, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Post Cereal plant. We are going to take you on the historic tour of this historic grounds, and as all of you stick together now, be sure to keep your button on, because that button identifies what group you're with. Each group has a different color. And now, follow me as we leave the visitors, area here now, and now we are actually in what we call here the new plant." The new plant was built late in the 1920s by Mr. Post, shortly after his first big expansion effort, which was concluded just at the time that World War I ended. This is called the new plant by all of us here who've been at the Post place for many, many years. Off to the left now, you will see the roasting ovens. Well, we're going through, and of course we're fast. Wow, you know. Well, I don't know, it's hard to describe it, because cereals are so much part of your life. To visit the place where they actually make shredded wheat, if you've been eating shredded wheat all of your life, is, it's like your first visit to the sea. It's always a surprise to see that there's actually a place where they stir Rice Krispies. Now, Rice Krispies, what is the error in what I'm telling you? Listen carefully. I'm throwing that in purposely. That is correct. Rice Krispies is not made by Post. Who makes Rice Krispies? Correctement. Kellogg. And where is Kellogg's? Correct. Well, they were the enemy. You were not allowed to mention Rice Krispies or the name Kellogg within the confines of the poster. And my mother would say, shh, don't say anything about Rice Krispies. And that's okay. You don't want to hurt their feelings. That's all right. Hurt their feelings. Say, can you imagine a six-year-old kid hurting the feelings of the Post Company? I'm talking about Rice Krispies. You know, you never know. Oh, people's feelings are very sensitive. So we went into this plant and we walked. Now, they had lines drawn on the concrete to show you where the tour should go. I had a little arrows, follow tour here. See, one of the high points of the tour came when the tour guide would stop all of us in our tracks, and we're standing there all together, and she would gather the people around, and then she would say, now, I want to show you something that is a very, very big part of our tour. It's the high point of the Post tour. Now look carefully over there. You see that building over there next to the great big warehouse, the one that's that little building? That is the building where Mr. Post first created Post Toasties. Many, many years ago, Mr. Post, who was a simple country druggist, decided that he had to create a food that was truly a healthful, delicious food for people who had problems in getting the proper vitamins, the proper nutrition, and he spent long, hard days and nights discovering his first health cereal, and he put it on the market as a druggist, as a health cereal. What was that cereal? I'm asking you, gang. Right here, you. What was the cereal, Art? It was not Post Toasties. That came later. What was the cereal? The first thing that he ever did. And it was considered a health food, apparently, when they first brought it out. And it was not a general cereal. It was a health food. Well, I will tell you. That comes later. I will not tell you. I'm really needling you. And then we went through the plant, see? And we finally came, here's the plant where they're making Post Toasties. They're making all these other Post cereals. And then we came to a place where she says, and now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to have to stop you right here now, because in the next part of our plant, they are making a cereal which is even today one of the deep-held secrets of the Post Company. We're not allowed to take it in there, but later on, we'll give you a taste of this wonderful cereal that you've all known ever since you've been. But we can't take you in there because we have secret ingredients and secret techniques to make this cereal. And we saw the boxes of the cereal. Endless duck. You see the frosty bobbing up and down. There it is. Coming out of the thick little cliff. What was that? What was the ship? It's still around. And it's still advertised on TV. They made a whole fetish about it was secret, and this was what Mr. Post. And then the tour really rose to great heights. We left that part, that was really a great high point, and you could see the people, the ladies all sitting there looking at the boxes of cereals. You know, they're all working on the assembly line and checking the labels and washing the machines with chocolate and all that. Very clean, and you could smell the smell, the overpowering in this company. Really, it's kind of fun. And we moved into the cultural section of the tour. And for all the work of art that Mr. Post, after he became a very wealthy man in the 1800s, he traveled to Europe. And she said this, it's a great wonder. Mr. Post traveled to Europe, and he began his new art collection. And you'll notice that this painting here to our left has cows, which are so realistic. These cows are so realistic that as you walk, the eyes of the cows follow you from place to place. Mr. Post purchased this magnificent painting in Milan, which is in Italy. It's a great Italian artwork. and he had the worst collection. I'll tell you, it's the kind of stuff that today, it's worth billions merely because he was the first guy to collect camp, but he thought it was real art. Like, for example, he had an entire tree, which everybody stood around a brass tree, which was made by a world-famous sculptor, a tree which was a life-size olive tree made out of brass, which he had in his living room, which had glass olives that were so lifelike that had tiny light bulbs in them. When the switch was thrown, all the little olives lit up. He also had a grapevine where the grapes lit up. It was this kind of eye that Mr. Post collected. You can see, it was great, great. So we went out in great wonder looking at all this fantastic stuff. And he had one picture, too, that I just thought was great. He tended to buy pictures of cows standing next to bridges. He liked that. He also liked pictures where guys were riding horses and wearing pink coats and jumping over walls. That was another one. He also had pictures of guys that appeared to have pants on made out of fur, and they were playing flutes. And they had horns. Curly hair, you've seen that type? And I had many, many pictures of that sort. And we were led through this with all large crowds of Midwesterners all marveling at this fantastic art that was collected by the man who created the cornflake. And he did. He created the cornflake, you know. And now we were taken in. This was what we were really looking forward to seeing. We were taken into this room that was like a little dining room. And all of us were served. The lady says, now the high point of our tour, we will be served with a little snack. And you'll be given a little gift to commemorate your visit here. And you'll sign the visitor's book, your historic visit to the post plant. Well, at that point, they would come out with ice cream that had as an integral ingredient of the ice cream the cereal which you have not been able to think of. The one that he first invented as a health food. And we were eating the cereal, and they gave us milk if you were a kid, and coffee if you were a grown-up, or tea, or whatever it was. And then the real moment of true glory came when the tour guide says, and now, ladies and gentlemen, she says, if you will file past this counter, we will give you a little gift that will forever remind you of your visit to the post factory. And so we went past the counter, and they handed us each a box, a pretty good-sized box. It was about a foot by about 8 inches by about 8 inches deep, and a nice cardboard box, a nicely done box with pictures of the plant on the outside. And when you took the top of the box off, inside was a complete assortment of tiny boxes filled with various types of cereals, including a plastic model of the original. It really is. We eat more cereal in this country than any other country. Most of the country sell cereal as part of its diet, but here, we think in terms of that cereal. You don't find that in any other country. And Mr. Post is credited with that. Now, what is the cereal? What? You are correct. You are correct. Grape nuts. Now, by the way, has it ever occurred to you what connection has this cereal got to do with grapes? Very interesting. And it has a connection, but only allegorically. You've come to the right place now. You never thought about these things, did you? Well, he invented the grape nut, and the grape nut was very secret. He went through the... And you know that the people... who have gone through a plant like that, who have had a visit to a thing of this kind, they will talk about it all their lives. Do you know that my Aunt Teresa, all of her life, talked about the time she was taken on a guided tour of the Coca-Cola plant of Winnetka, Illinois. And incidentally, that story was only topped by my Aunt Clara's story that she once was taken on a guided tour of the Curtis Candy plant, where they actually made Baby Ruth candy bars. And you could see Baby Ruth's, and you could see Clark Bars. and she talked about how they wrapped them. All the great wonders of the technological world. So I'm going to have to be honest with you. I'm going to have to be honest with you. You're listening to a guy. Well, I don't often talk about true highlights in my life. I don't think most of us want to admit that, our life has had really high points. We kick voice out. Do you know one of the highlights of my absolute life? One time, I was
The crow sent forth. I saw it making a place like that.
Given a ceremonial golf ball at the end of the trip that had a ring on it that could be used for a keychain. I had a Pro Flight golf ball keychain, which was one of my prized possessions for a long time. I would like to know where it is now. It'd be a great thing to have. You know? So, you know, don't ignore the wonders that are around you. They are everywhere. You'd be surprised how exciting it would be for you to go through, say, the Pepsi-Cola plant in East Brunswick. See the actual Pepsi-Cola bean being roasted by the elves there, made into this drink, which is therapeutic to keep you young forever. Have you noticed that?